Public Protector and the Deputy Public Protector and the Office of the Public Protector. Also thank the Public Protector for being flexible. She was on time. She was told that we are going to start at 2, and we asked her to come at 2:30 because of our prior meeting. And she was prepared to accommodate us. Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Public Protector and your delegation. We are today going to be receiving a briefing from the Public Protector on the APP and their budget. Since we are a new committee, we have been introducing ourselves for the whole of these 2 weeks, but I think it's important that you must know who you are speaking to. My name is Bulelani Magwanisha. I'm the chairperson of the committee. I am from Gauteng, a member of the ANC.
Thank you very much, Hisham Mohammed from the Western Cape, representing the African National Congress.
Kobodile Richard Janji, Vescap, Congolos.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Noma Temba Maseko Jele from Gauteng ANC. I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you very much, Chair. I am Kola Nola, a representative of the ANC. I am from the Eastern Cape. But I think just one little thing. The disclaimer you're starting about is very important. That the meeting is convened on the basis of receiving overview, APP and budget only. Other matters relating to the office are going to be attended to some other time. Thank you very much.
Afternoon, Chair. I'm Tilibali Mrauzi from Limpopo Province, representing EFF as a full member of this committee.
Mbuyiseni Ndlozi.
Steve Swart from the ICDP.
Colonel Sprendas, the DA, but we of course know each other.
Good afternoon, Werner Horn, DA.
Good afternoon, I'm James Self from the DA.
Good afternoon, Bulma Nyuhu-Driffen, ANC, and from the Western Cape. This is not my voice you're hearing the voice of the sign language interpreter, Dolphin. Greetings.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Over to you, Public Protector, if you can introduce your team.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members. I'll introduce my team and start with the briefing. I've got Advocate Malunga, the Deputy Public Protector, Mr. Mahlangu, the CEO of the Public Protector South Africa, Ms. Yalegile Lusibane, the CFO from the Public Protector Office, Ms. Basani Baloyi, the Chief Operating Officer. I'm calling them with CFOs, CEOs, and COOs, so most of the time I don't utilize their surnames. Thank you, Chairperson. Can I start? Okay.
You can introduce yourself.
Okay. I'm Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane, the Public Protector, South Africa. Let me take this opportunity to congratulate you and all members of the committee who have been elected to the 6th Parliament and being appointed to serve. Congratulations to you as the chairperson, and you have been entrusted with this responsibility. to preside over these meetings, and I wish all of you well in this role. From my side, as the head of the institution that is accountable to the National Assembly and reports to the National Assembly on its activities and performance of its institution at least once a year as per Section 181(5) of the Constitution, I look forward to a healthy and constructive working relationship. Yours is indeed a daunting task. Apart from holding institutions such as the Power Protector to account and maintain oversight over the executive, you also shoulder the responsibility of making laws. You do all that as part of your contribution as the legislature towards ensuring that our young democracy, constitutional democracy, remains intact. This role and trust you into the heart of the struggle for the respect of the rule of law, the promotion and maintenance of good governance, and the upholding of the human rights. As the Constitutional Court put it, if you are the embodiment of the centuries-old dreams and legitimate aspirations of all our people, the voices of all South Africans, especially the poor, the voiceless, and the least remembered, the watchdog of state resources, the enforcer of fiscal discipline, and cost-effectiveness of the common good of all our people. Among the laws the National Assembly has passed since 1994 are those from which I derive additional investigative powers as contemplated in Section 182 of the Constitution. This includes, but not limited to, the Public Protector Act, the Executive Members Ethics Act, the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act, and the Protected Disclosure Act, all of which I will deal with shortly. We are aware that this may be tantamount to preaching to the choir, but we thought it prudent to briefly touch on our mandate and role as set out to set out the scene so that when we present our annual performance plan, then you can understand. We therefore ask honorable members' indulgence. As the Power Protector South Africa, we are a creation of the Constitution, Section 181, an independent constitutional institution with whom we share the responsibility of strengthening constitutional democracy. We are independent and subject only to the Constitution and the rule of law. We must be impartial and exercise our powers and perform our functions without fear, favor, or prejudice. Other organs of state must assist and protect us to ensure our independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness. In addition, no person or organ of state may interfere with our functioning. We have the power, as regulated by the national legislation, to investigate, report on, remedy any conduct in state affairs, in public administration, or any sphere of government that is alleged or suspected to be improper or result in any impropriety or prejudice. In terms of Section 182(3) of the Constitution, we may not investigate court decisions. So we must be accessible to all persons and communities, and any investigation which is investigated, we need to issue a report, and that report must be published. As I said earlier, we have additional powers in terms of our national legislation. The Power Protector Act, we are empowered to investigate undue delays in delivery of public services, unfair behavior, abuse of power, abuse of state resources, dishonesty, improper dealings in respect of public money, and improper enrichment. We also have corruption mandate in terms of Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. When we investigate in terms of this law and establish evidence of corruption, which is a criminal offense, we then defer this to the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, also known as the HOCS, to take the matter further and bring this to the attention of the National Prosecuting Authority. Of late, there has been a debate on whether we have the power to investigate alleged money laundering in relation to one of the matters before us. Our view is, depending on the nature of the complaint, we can invoke this law to deal with that kind of a case. We further serve as a safe haven for whistleblowers under the Protected Disclosure Act. In terms of this law, those people in the public sector who witness wrongdoing in their workplaces report to the relevant authorities suffer what they suspect to be occupational detriment, can tend to my office for assistance. We relied on this law to investigate own initiative complaint of Imzinkulu case, where we found that SAPS failed to protect the whistleblowers involved. In addition to this, in fact, this matter is, was taken on review. The President, NPA, and Department of Justice have joined in this case. In addition to this, we have the power to enforce executive ethics under the Executive Members Ethics Act. Under this law, complaints are suspect, which about suspected breaches of the code, and can only be received from members of the executive, members of parliament, such as yourselves, and members of the provincial legislature. Only my office can investigate such claims, and on receipt of a complaint, we are obliged to investigate. Such investigations ought to be conducted within a month, failing which I must write to the President or the Premier to inform them of the failure to meet the deadline, and that I will report on conclusions on the matter. While it may come across as a waste of time to mention this obvious information, recent history has taught us never to assume that our powers are understood by all and sundry, most especially those who expect who are expected to be conversant with the constitutional and legislative framework relating to the public protector. As an example, we recently had senior members of the executive accusing the office of venturing into political territory when investigating a complaint lodged in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act. So the members of the executive in question appeared to be under the impression that the institution just decided to pursue these matters for investigation, whereas we've received complaints and we are obligated to investigate. An important lesson that we drew from the episode is never to assume that people know what we do and where we draw our powers from, because we are only subjected to the law and nothing else. In the Constitutional Court case of EFF and others versus the Speaker, the Constitutional Court reminded us that the public protector are indeed very, the powers of the public protector are indeed wide, that leave no level of government power above scrutiny, coincidental embarrassment, and censure. Her investigative powers are not supposed to bow down to anybody, not even the door of the highest chambers of royal state's power. The predicament, though, is that mere allegations and investigation of improper or corrupt conduct against all, especially powerful public office bearers, are generally bound to attract a very unfriendly response. An unfavorable finding of unethical or corrupt conduct coupled with remedial action will probably be strongly resisted in an attempt to repair or soften an inescapable reputational damage. It is unlikely that unpleasant findings and a biting remedial action would readily be welcomed by those investigated. The work that we do is not easy. Every single person is in the Republic has their own ideas as how it should be done. We've taken a decision they do not like. We are incompetent, we are biased, involved in political factionalism or not fit for office, etc. But then we will try our level best to do our work without fear or favor and serve the South Africans, especially people at the grassroots level. The truth of the matter is that our legal framework provides for such checks and balances. Once a party is unhappy with our outcome, it's within their law to take us on review, and we see this all the time in the courts where the higher court decision are appealed successfully at the Supreme Court of Appeal or the Constitutional Court. Strangely, when this happens, we never hear that high courts being accused of a lot of things that we've been subjected to. We've taken it upon ourselves to continuously explain to everyone, hoping that one day we will see things from the same perspective. We have Vision 2023 as an institution. That's our key focus until 2023. It has 8 pillars to enhance access to our services, engage communities in their mother tongues for effective communication, increasing our footprint, leveraging stakeholder relations to advance our interests through MOUs, projecting an image of a stronghold for the poor, as we should be, ensuring that people are well-versed on their rights, persuading organs of state to have effective in-house complaints resolutions means to offload some of the burden from our shoulders, inspiring people to be their own liberators. Despite these challenges, we have kept our heads low and focused on the task at hand. Since my arrival in the office in October 2016, we have been trusted with the just under 50,000 complaints, 95% of which are bread and butter matters affecting the people at the grassroots. We finalized nearly 35,000 of those matters. I must add that 2019-20 caseload is not yet included in these statistics. Not all of the matters that we finalize result in formal investigations, which explains why I've only indicated that we have issued around 102 reports, and of those reports, more than 70 remain unchallenged in court. The rest have been taken on review, and we have successfully defended two. Since the commencement of my tenure, a total of 7 reports have been set aside on grounds of irrationality, unreasonableness, and so forth. Only 2 of these were issued by me, while the rest predate my incumbency. Another important point to make is that this institution hardly had a problem of review applications against reports until the Constitutional Court ruled in March 2016 that the Public Protector's remedial action is binding. Since then, the number of review applications has been on an upward trend. When I assumed office, there were already 16 such applications. To date, we have 30 reports which have been taken on review. Some of the cases are frivolous, and it can be said that the applications made are merely to save face. We have been on a drive to encourage organs of state to establish internal complaints units so as to manage the influx of complaints to us. That way, we don't do the public servants' work, but focus on systemic and own initiative investigations. We have held to account administrations under the leadership of different political parties, national and provincial departments, municipalities, universities, and other organs of state. We've also held to account various ministers, premiers, MECs, mayors, and officials. Our approach remained the same. What happened? A factual account of who did what should have happened, the standards that ought to have been upheld, such as policies, the laws, and the constitution, and whether there's any discrepancy between the two. There is certainly room for improvement, and we will redouble our efforts, working within our means to get more work to be done with less. Chairperson, let me hand over to the Chief Executive Officer to then present the APP.
Thanks, Fifi. Through you, Chair. Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members. Mine is to take you through what the organization is all about. I'll try to go as slow as possible since this is our first visit. We'll start with the vision of the organization. It's basically the empowerment of people and accountable public administration. That's what we believe in. And therefore, the mission to protect all persons against administrative injustices, improve service delivery, and promote good governance in state affairs. So our reports basically talk to those things. The purpose is basically a catalyst for change in pursuit of a good governance. Now, we have principles, we call them AIR, which is accountability, integrity, and responsiveness. I'll talk much about that. And then our values are BULE, which is passion. We are a very passionate organization, and Ubuntu, we believe in respecting the dignity of everyone who comes to our office and people in general, and also the constitutionality. Leadership, we always believe that as an organization, we must lead by example, and efficiency talks to how we respond, the responsiveness to the reports or the investigations that we are doing. Our strategic outcome and the orientated goals, it's prompt service delivery, and then accessible to public protector service. institutions and public complaints mechanism strengthened. I'll go into more details on that. When you said from in the strategic outcome, the orientated goals and strategic objectives, the first one is to say when we, the meaning of the prompt service delivery to all persons and institutions is in order to promote and maintain good governance. We investigate and finalize the reports promptly. We're trying our best in that regard. We promote a culture of good governance in all the findings that we produce. And then we also ensure that the office is accessible, which means our services are supposed to be accessible. This is the easy of access to public protector services in terms of Section 182(4) of the Constitution. We are also an effective and efficient people-driven organization, meaning that we develop and implement information communication technology to optimally support our business objectives. We have a core business and we support business to enable the investigators to do their work. We always ensure that we have secure office accommodation. We implement an institutional effectiveness turnaround approach to improve efficiency. We also, because of the history of the findings, audit findings, we also have a strategic objective that mainly deals with obtaining a clean audit. That's part of leading by example. Oversight institutions and public complaints mechanism strengthening the role of ombudsman institution and assist to establish internal complaints handling mechanism. We from time to time engage other ombudsman and then share what we are doing with them. Then there's 2019 targets per strategic goal, which is a breakdown of what's going to happen going forward. The strategic objective number one is to investigate and finalize reports promptly. There we are saying our performance indicator is number of cases finalized, and then the target will be finalized 7,000 cases per annum going forward. Then the performance indicator number two, there will be number of investigation reports finalized and published. Finalized and published 56 investigation reports by the end of the financial year. I think the PP has explained that not all the reports are published, hence the number is like that. Then percentage of adherence to turnaround times in finalization of cases. We are saying we try by all means to finalize 100% of cases within the following turnaround times. If it's early resolution, it should be within 6 months. Service delivery matters, it should at least be within 12 months, and then the good governance matters at least by 24 months. So we categorize the complaints that we receive as an office. Then carry on to investigate and finalize report. We are saying percentage of 2 years and older cases finalized. The target is to finalize 100% of 2 years and older cases by the end of the financial year. Then what follows there is investigation and finalization of systematic investigation intervention. We identify and investigate two systemic interventions per financial year. Then second one, objective will be promote a culture of good governance. Here we are saying the performance indicator will be number of dialogues held with organs of state on systematic challenges. We anticipate to have 10 dialogues held with organs of the state on systematic challenges by the end of March 2020. There is the strategic objective on ease of access to public protector services. The performance indicator there is to say number of outreach clinics conducted across the country. We anticipate to conduct 208 clinics across the country by the end of March 2020. This is to ensure that the people know about our services and we go closer to them. We therefore say, again, another performance indicator in terms of ease of access is the number of public protector roadshows. We are planning to conduct 9 public protector roadshows, including national events. We, from time to time, go to the national events so that we make our office known. Number of radio slots conducted, we are saying going forward, we are going to conduct 2 radio slots per province. Then the strategic objective, implement an institutional effectiveness turnaround approach to improve efficiency. We are saying the performance indicator there is percentage of development and implementation of the turnaround strategy. There we are saying that we need to approve 100% the implementation of the phase 2 strategy organizational structure. We're basically working closely with the DPSA to look at how the machinery of Public Protector SA is working, and we should be finalized going forward this financial year. I said it earlier that because of the history of our books, we also identify one strategic objective called obtain clean audit. We're planning to obtain a clean audit. We review and implement everything that has gone wrong in the past so that we have a clean strategy. Then because of accessibility, we also feel that we must have a strategic objective that talk to secure office accommodation. Basically, this talk about state-owned accommodation, number of state-owned office accommodations secured. We're saying at least secure two state-owned office accommodation. And going forward, strengthening the role of ombudsman institutions and assist to establish internal complaints handling mechanism within the organs of the state. The performance indicator is the number of bilateral agreements entered into annually. The target is to enter into one bilateral agreement with an ombudsman institution or assist an organ of state to strengthen its internal complaints handling mechanism by 31st March 2020. Percentage of IOC board meetings chaired, the public protector is chairing 100% of all the meetings of the research organization that is part of IOMA. It's an association of ombudsman. Percentage of IOMA meetings attended by the public protector, as a current president of the IOMA, she also shares attend 100% of the meeting schedules within the current financial year. That's basically that in terms of our objective. And I'll hand over, with the permission, Chairperson, I'll hand over to our chief financial officer to talk to the budget.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members. I will take you through the 2019-20 MTF budget for the office, starting from slide number 34. The budget that we are receiving from the National Treasury for 2019-20 is 321.4 million. However, we've also projected our own revenue in terms of interest that we're receiving from the bank as well as other income, and therefore the total revenue estimated for the 2019-20 financial year is 322.6 million. In terms of 2020-21, the total estimated revenue is sitting at 340.3 million. In terms of 2021-22 financial year is 357.7 million. In terms of the breakdown or the economic classification, 257.1 million in 2019-20 will be for the compensation of employees, and our goods and services will be taking 62.5 million. Of that 62.5 million, 56.7 is contractual obligations, and 2.3 million of that will be funding off our APP activities as outlined by the CEO earlier. Then we've got 3.4 million that is for other operational costs which are non-contractual. And then we've got 3 million on capital expenditure. That is just the breakdown of the 2019-20 financial year's budget. In terms of slide number 35, we're breaking down the budget as per each program. Administration has a total budget of 123.9 million. Compensation of employees at 64.2 million. Goods and services at 56.6 million. Capital expenditure at 3 million in 1920. And program number two, which is investigations, is sitting at 185.2 million, of which 180 million is for compensation of employees. Goods and services under the program two, which is investigations, sits at 5.1 million. Program three, which is stakeholder management, the total budget for the 1920 financial year is 13.4 million, and the compensation of employees is sitting at 12.8, goods and services at 619, which ties back to the 322.6 million for the year. The next slide talks to challenges and interventions, strategic challenges that the institution is facing. Currently, we are insufficiently funded as the institution. However, in terms of our interventions, we from time to time engage the National Treasury through the budget bid processes.
And secondly, we have capacity shortages. What we mean by that is we've got few investigators. We're also lacking diverse skills such as forensic, actuarial, engineering, quantity surveying, etc. within our workforce. What we're currently doing in terms of that challenge, we are outsourcing some of the investigations where such expertise are required. And in some instances, we've got MOUs and SLAs with other organs of state where they assist us with those investigations. In terms of security, excuse me, also lacking security measures and systems, especially in our provincial and regional offices. And what we currently plan to do is to leverage state resources by securing office accommodation, as the CEO mentioned earlier, state-owned accommodation where we'll be able to be in a shared environment and we don't have to pay security services on our own, which we currently cannot afford. And then from slide number 38, we are indicating additional funding that we had presented to the National Treasury during the 2019 MTF of additional budget that we requested but who could not be provided, and it's broken down in terms of funding of critical positions. There's been positions that were vacated which we could not be able to fill, which includes core business in terms of investigators. For 2019-20, the additional budget required on those positions is 15.6 million, and on the MTF as a whole, it's sitting at 49.7. We also require a budget for professional fees, as I indicated earlier, where we require subject matter experts in terms of complex investigations, which those skills we do not have in-house. We're estimating 13.1 million in 2019-20, and for the MTF, 41.7 million. In terms of the security services, which I alluded to earlier, for us to be able to have security services in all our offices and be able to have security systems in place, as well as in our head office, we require 6.1 million in 2019-20, and for the MTF, we'll require 19.4. Then we also have estimated an amount of 5.3, which is gratuity of the Deputy Public Protector. His term is coming to an end later this year. Such is not provided for in terms of his conditions of service. However, it's a request that we're putting forward for the portfolio committee to consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We're done.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I will now invite inputs from members, questions, priority seeking questions, opinions. Honorable Kola Mola, Honorable Glenis Breitenbach, Honorable Horn, Honorable Self, Honorable Swart, Honorable Mulaudze, Honorable Mohammed, Honorable Janji, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let us, of course, welcome the presentation by the Office of the Public Protector. Chair, I've got only 2-3 questions. Then I'm done. One, in the overview, the PP made mention of they are in an institution that operates without any form of interference, whether from individuals or state or organs of state. Secondly, Chair, there is in the overview an allegation that there is a member of the executive or some members of the executive who alleges that the PP's office is influenced by the politics of the day. But the overview does not give a true reflection against what has been alleged in the what is said to have been alleged in the report. For the benefit of the committee chair and everyone who's here and the public entirely, let us ask again this question in bold capital letters. Does the PP's office get influenced by the political dynamics of South Africa to take decisions or to conduct itself in the discharge of its own mandate? Two, chair. Part of what reflects from the report is there is a commitment of whistleblower protection, which is fine. Now, the question I want to pose to the office is, do they offer witness protection, or they are dependent to their engagement with the SAC person, any relevant department to that effect? Lastly, Chair, they have made mention that there are a number of almost approximately 30 cases that have been taken to review. One on that, these 30 cases that have been taken to review are against how many number of cases that they have received as an office. Two, Chair, lastly, should someone not take this number of cases that have been taken to review as an alarm that there is a form of doubt and confidence in the impartiality of the Public Protector's Office? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mulaute. Thank you, Honorable Glenis Breitenbach. I'm improving, Honorable.
I can see that. Thank you. You're very helpful after the fact. Thank you for your presentation. I have a few questions, certainly more than the previous Honorable Member. I'm interested in the appeal to the Constitutional Court in the matter of the personal cost order against the Public Protector. I'm interested to find out who's funding that litigation. You recently released a redacted report. I would be interested to know why you released the report in a redacted form, and in terms of which legislation it was released in such redacted form. In 2018-2019, you were able to pay your were you able to pay your contracted commitments, or did you receive extra funding from the Department of Justice, and if so, how much? You're chasing a clean audit target for 2021. I'd like some details on the strategy, please. I'd also like some details on the position of the Deputy Public Protector. We're aware of the, for want of a better description, the difficulties surrounding his security clearance. I would like some detail of the fact that he's in fact being gainfully employed. I must assume that there are many reports in your office that don't require top secret clearance, and is he working on those? And if not, why not? The remedial the percentage of following up of remedial action, that indicator has been removed. Why is that? I'd like a little detail on with whom you're having dialogues with state institutions, with which institutions, and what the outcomes are that you expect to receive there. And the public, the PSA has raised concerns about union members and shop stewards in your office being victimized and investigated, they say, by state security. Mm-hmm. Also by attorneys who are hired by, they say, your office and are subjected to unlawful surveillance of cell phones, telephone calls, and laptops. Can we just have a bit more detail about that issue, please? What is happening there, and have those issues been resolved? And then finally, the number of review applications you have already indicated, could you give me an indication of how many of those review applications are defended? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Horn.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Through you, the Estina matter, the Fiery Dairy matter, Chairperson, on the 17th of April last year, when the public protector came to present her annual performance plan, she, based on some comments made previously by the then committee, informed us that she was to open a fresh investigation.
Honorable Hahn, can you bring your mic closer?
Sorry. So on the 17th of April last year, when the public protector presented her APP to the previous committee, she informed us that based on the dissatisfaction of the committee in the Fifth Parliament about the way the investigation into the Vrede Dairy matter was handled, she was reopening the investigation with a twofold focus. Firstly, to interview the supposed beneficiaries, and secondly, to look into the involvement of politicians in the drafting of the plan and the sign-off. So we know from media reports that a year later there was public hearings in Vrede where the beneficiaries were invited. Could we get an update as to what other progress, if any, have been made in respect of the investigation into the involvement of politicians in this whole saga? And then in respect of the report that did come out and the finding by the North Gauteng High Court that it was reviewed, set aside, and found unconstitutional, we know that in public, the public protector said that she fundamentally disagrees with that finding and that she was looking to seek direct access to the Constitutional Court to obviously address the what she deems erroneous findings of the North Gauteng High Court. So if we could be apprised as to whether that application to the Constitutional Court has happened. Then in respect of the matter she has, that has been raised here today in the presentation on page 9 of the presentation, and as the public protector has indicated, as a matter of fact, a matter of public debate, and that's the information that there is now an investigation into a possible money laundering on the part of the president. I would like to just get clarity from the public protector. She refers to her powers in terms of POCA, the Prevention of and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. But the way I read that specific section, section 64A3, it is very clear that there firstly must be an allegation of corrupt activities, and secondly, that the allegation must turn on public money. Now, the complaint which led to this expansion of the investigation dealt with private money, so I think we need an explanation as to how the the matter then can be within a jurisdiction. And secondly, since specifically, even though we know she on own initiative may investigate matters, the Act is also quite clear to say that there must be at least an allegation of a possible breach of POCA. Then, Chair, my last question relates to the report released, the last high-profile report released, and specifically, that's the one regarding Minister Gordhan, the so-called rogue unit at SARS. And the one matter I want to be clarified on there is that the public protector in a report stated that these security intelligence surveillance equipment of SARS, she made specific inquiries about. SARS failed or refused to come back to her to provide an answer, detail or information. And from the reading of the report, it's quite clear that in a somewhat, with respect, circular manner, the public protector then argues that because there's no answer, there's something to hide, and therefore it must sustain findings that this unit was, as a matter of fact, then a security or a surveillance unit, an intelligence operation. Now, what I want an answer on is that if I read the Public Protector Act, it's quite clear that there's very specific powers of subpoena available to the public protector when she is in need of information and explanation, evidence of any nature. And then furthermore, even in, that's in section 7A, as a matter of fact, also allows her to apply and obtain a warrant for search and seizure, and to ultimately to be competent to enter to go and find what she's looking for. So the question is, why did she not make use of all of the powers her own act giver, but rather then makes an adverse finding on a failure to answer in what is obviously a report of national importance. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Self.
Thank you very much indeed, Chairperson. I'd like to ask, flowing from the questions asked by my colleagues around litigation, there's a great deal, as the public protector referred to on slide 15, of applications to review reports that are done by her office. But the Honourable Breidenbach asked how many of the review applications are actually contested by the public protector. What I would actually like to know is how much money has been budgeted for legal challenges to the public protector's reports in the upcoming year. Because you will appreciate that one of the likely or certain legal challenges is going to be on the part of the report into the so-called rogue unit of SARS and Minister Gordhan. And since the South African taxpayer will be paying the cost of this litigation on the part of the public protector, may we then be informed who the legal counsel is that has been briefed to appear on behalf of the public protector in this matter?
Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Public Protector. A number of issues have been raised in your report to us, one of which relates to the Deputy Public Protector and his position, and I'm just concerned about the issue relating to the fact that his term comes to an end now, And Chair, it's up to us as a committee, we need to start looking at that to appoint a deputy public protector. But the lack of a provision for any gratuity, and I think that is something that one always needs to look at as well. That's the first issue, and I was going to cover the issue of the work that the deputy public protector is doing now, but that has been covered by one of my colleagues. Chair, one of the issues relating to the report on Minister Gordhan and the SARS unit is that this report differs from other reports because it now contains a specific instruction that remedial action cannot be ignored whilst a court considers any review of that report. Now, why was it deemed necessary to bring this finding into this particular report when it's never been done in any other report? Chair, then the issue relating to, and an issue that I have raised continually in the other committee in the prior parliament was the litigation costs. And I was fully appreciative of the fact that once it was found that the reports are binding, there would be large numbers of reviews with concomitant legal cost issues. My concern is whether on paragraph page 14 of your documentation you indicate legal fees. Audited outcome 2017-18 is 20 million. Adjusted budget for 18-19 is 15 million. Your budget for this year is 10 million. Whether, firstly, that it will be sufficient, and secondly, whether one is not then very cautious in the manner one approaches one's reports, bearing in mind that there is a very good prospect of reviews and costs. Lastly, then, I would like to ask, when one has funding of litigation and considering your financial constraints, what cases you are going to litigate on and who is funding litigation. We are fully aware that you are litigating against members of this committee, in particular Advocate Glynis Breitenbach and Mr. Werner Horn, due to the defamation court case that you've brought. Who is funding that litigation? Is the Office of the Public Protector funding that litigation? Thank you. Those are my questions from now. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Joseph.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable
Mulauta. Oh, thanks, Chairperson, and thanks, Public Protector. My first question will be about the assistant by the department in the previous financial year about the outstanding invoices, which in 2017-2018, they assisted the public protector by 15 million to pay to pay the outstanding invoices. I just want to know, by this current financial year, do you still have that problem of outstanding invoices which need to be paid? The other thing is about the 38 institutions which you named them and shamed them by failing to comply with the remedial actions of the public protector. Did you take the matter up to the minister or to the president or to the MEC or premier in terms of provinces as per rule 44. The other question is about the technically insolvency which was declared by the AG on the AG report 2017-2018 and again 2018-2019. Just want to know, the public protector able to pay all the contracted commitments which caused the public protector's office to be technically insolvent? And the issue of Vision 2023, the eight pillars, at slide 16 of your presentation, how far with them, all of them, which stage are they now? those 8 pillars for 2023 vision for the public protector. Lastly, is about Minister Pravin Gordhan's matter. Did you refer or forward the matter to the NPA or any investigative authorities, as he alleged that the thing which was happening there at SARS was illegal activities? Thank you.
Honorable Mohammed.
Thank you, Jay. I've been covered. Thank you.
Honorable Janje. Honorable Janje.
Chair, I just want to, I have a series of interactions with the public protector. I just want to start at a general level first, before I go to the APP and the finances. I must say I was a bit confused receiving this yesterday, because I had invested a lot of time in the very good work you did in the APP, and you went at length in terms of the organizational environment, you know, to help us understand, because at the end you're making a case, which I think it's important to respond to, about additional funding and why you need this, and so, and that helped. But I got confused because your presentation, which I wish you did, which I'd like to ignore, confused me, because it gave me two sets of public protectors. This, which you have just presented, is a presentation of a public protector who is very angry and aggrieved, basically, who is raising issues that don't necessarily live in this committee, should not be here, because you're responding to allegations that have been made, or call them attacks on you, whether it's an executive member, this one. That's something I thought you should have just issued a statement, a very good statement, and respond to those issues, and not bring those issues to them, because we have not asked you. Today is about us listening to your plans going forward, so that we see whether there's a credible plan that we want to, because you're asking particular request. So I really want to make that point, that I was disappointed, Chair, that it's more than 6-7 slides where you're really offloading the kind of disappointment that you have, and so on. And I thought that was irrelevant, to be honest, from where I'm sitting. And let me start, Chair, to go to the APP. Because I'm actually going to start to, because if we're to follow these things you're raising, we're going to have to ask you, who is this member of the executive they are referring to? Who's nameless in this? And there are many of them, but I won't go there. I want to go to the APP. And maybe the first point I want to get into the APP, let me start with what you said are your achievements. The only achievement, you make the point that you just have under 50,000 complaints in your 2.5 years that you have. And 95% of that is bread and butter matters. So basically, well, the 95% means that there's 35,000 of the 50,000 which constitute your bread and butter issues. Meaning, therefore, there's about 12,500 of that 35,000 that you have not touched at all, and it falls under your achievement, and it's supposed to be bread and butter issue. These are your easy issues to deal with, and you call them early release kind of reports. That's the category, and you're not seeing that, because all of what is in the media, it's about 2,500 out of that 50,000. And I'm trying to break it down. It's not broken down here, but I think you have given a sense of that. That on its own says to me, I can't see that as a success as it stands. And I really want to make that point. I would welcome your response to that. Certainly, I don't see it as that. And then you speak about 100 investigation reports over 3 years. Let me not say 3 years, 2.5 years that you have done, 100 of those. I'm raising that because I want to go to the APP where you speak about on annual basis you want to have 56 as an example that you want to. And as we sit here, we're down with the first quarter. And my question is, out of the 56 of the first quarter, can you tell us now, because it is this financial year, how many have you done out of that 56? I'm not going to even touch the second quarter that we are in now. You've done with the first quarter, which is the 56 reports. Page 2 and page 3 of the APP itself, and not the presentation, if I may take you there, it would be important maybe if you can respond or send them in writing. The old and the new cases. There's a backlog, I think that you are referring to. I think it would be important to just get a breakdown of that and a list of those. Page 3, and in fact that breakdown for me, it will also be help if you get an age analysis of that, of those kind of cases, broken down per issue, per geographic area, and the percentage concluded in each of those kind of cases. Because from your 466 backlog, we have 183 that has not been touched at all, and you raise that in your APP. I would be interested if we can be finished with a response to that. I'm still on the APP chair, as I said, and I'd like to spend a little bit of time on this, though I've been covered in some areas by my colleagues. And if I were to go back to the 56 target that you have per year starting from this year, because I'm interested what is the basis for that. Because if you, for example, you say the number of cases finalized is 7,000 per annum, and then the number of investigation reports finalized and published, you're looking at this 56 by 31st March. I think I've raised some of the question there. Because if you said in 3 years, 2.5 years, you produce 100, and I'm interested how do you reach to this 56 now that you're putting up in terms of the year that is under review. The number of outreach clinics. This is something that I'm very curious about because your vision speaks about Vision 2023, and you speak about grassroots. Both in your budget and in your APP, there's very less about grassroots. Because, for example, you've got 208 clinics broken down per quarter, 52. And even if we were to do that, even in this quarter, how many clinics out of those 52 that you have outlined there have you concluded? Well, the quarter is finished as we move forward. Well, I'm trying to leave Chair. All other things that we're going to come back to, there are quite a number of things that are very juicy about the public protector that we might need to call separate meetings for. I'm trying to just focus on your plans and really how credible it is for us to support in your endeavors. You also speak about the caseload for investigators. Would you share with us, you would know, for example, how many investigators that you have, and how many, what is the caseload per investigator, and so on. And then on the budget, if I may go there, Chair, and Member Swart has attended to this, just on the legal fees. Because James South's question, Honorable James South's question is answered there. We already know as we sit here, as he indicated, that the previous year you utilized, or what was budgeted for was 15 million just for legal fees. So this current year, and the next other 2 years, you have budgeted 10 million for legal fees. And this is a very important question to try and understand, because I mean, if I were to make trade-offs, I would, out of that 10 million of legal fees, get a gratuity for the deputy public protector. It's there. You can get it. But you have planned, because your legal fees seem to be very exorbitant from where I'm sitting, but it has to do with the kind of reports and the quality of those reports, because you complain in the presentation that your reports are taken in review, which is legal, and also they are set aside. And the reason why reports are set aside was it has to do with the quality of those reports and whether there was proper work, there was proper legal advice achieved in the first place to ensure that before a report is released, it can run through any scrutiny. And so here we have to budget for what I would call incompetence. I'll use that word, because you've said you're being called incompetent, but on the basis of the facts and evidence available in front of us, I think I can venture into that. Still on the budget, Chair, I would want to just understand from the finance on page 36 of your presentation, you said the value proposition budget you have presented to the National Treasury. Can you give us a status on that? Where is that thing? Is there any progress on that? And then to follow that, just to go to I'm dealing with too many documents at the same time. Just back on the APP, I was a bit concerned about the empty spaces in your APP, page 37, I think, of your original APP. It seems to be a very incomplete APP, where there are no targets set for quite a number of the issues that you've put there. Either there's no program, there's no plan for that, and yet you are asking us to give you 160 million because you're saying you are underfunded. And I'm not convinced nor persuaded when I see such a plan and the financial plan that you have put up. I still have got a lot more that I want to ask. If I don't know if you allow me to continue, can I pause here for now, Chair?
This is not the last meeting we have with the public protector. And we might have a situation where we sleep here the whole night. We don't mind, but others would. Honorable Sloze.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. We've been convened here, really, to be abreast about the future plans of this office. I find it very ridiculous and a serious abuse of power for members of parliament when the rest of citizens in South Africa have to engage the Office of the Public Protector in relation to the detail of her reports, have to approach legal institutions. Imagine what's going to happen to our democracy if we abused our power like these members are doing. Do we question judges get money from us too? Do we engage in this ridiculous exercise, explain this ruling, explain that ruling, why use these words, why use this sentence when you did not use this sentence before? It's a conflict of interest. These members of parliament are motivated by constitutional delinquency to undermine this office. If you have a problem with the public protector's reports, there is a process recommended about that, a legal process. It's an abuse of power. Power that the people have given to ourselves as members of parliament. What's going to happen? Now she must come here and I explain her reports, the details of reports, many of which are in front of courts. No, it's wrong. I mean, some of them are colleagues of Praveen Godhan, Mr. Praveen Godhan, my apologies. Some of them are colleagues of Mr. Gwede Mantashe, who, by the way, is the executive member being spoken about here. It's not a secret that the executive members who go out there in the public and say the public protector, because she is investigating members of the executive, as it is her job, she is being political. So, that's the first set of comments. It's therefore a lie. Okay, let me fix my language. I don't want to degenerate. It's misleading. Well, the honorable member says the public protector spent 7 pages of anger. You know, I had to go through majority of the pages that are speaking about what her office does. Many of us here are meeting her for the first time. In fact, this is the first time she comes to Parliament in the sixth administration. All the things that she's speaking here have to do with what her office is about. It's an important preamble. Number one.
Just a point of order, sir. Are we... Just a point of order. Apology, Honorable Joss. Are we going to be given an opportunity to correct the misperception that he is creating here deliberately? Because I... We're members of Parliament.
But that's not
here.
A point of order. It's really not a... I listened to you. I never did those things you're doing.
Report in front of
offends you.
Better focus on the report.
Don't disrupt the meeting. You are disrupting the meeting. You must wait.
Honorable Joseph.
Sorry, Chairperson. My apologies.
He was not yet done. Let's give him a
chance. Okay.
Chair, I want to have an opportunity because we are being misinterpreted here in front, in live, by this honorable member. So I think it would be important that we correct those things when he's done, because he's clearly out of sync in terms of what he's saying.
Honorable members, I think Honorable Jose, it will be important to ask a question, make your points, but I also think that most of the issues you are raising, Parliament has the right to make the public protector to account. But she will be allowed to clarify and answer questions to the honorable members. But I think the regime that governs the judges and the regime that governs the public protectors are different.
No, Chairperson, you are debating with me. I'm asking you to be above board. A person raises a point of order. It's not a point. You must tell him that. That's not a point of order. You have to be above board if you're going to earn the respect of all of us. And if I'm out of order, I will retract whatever. That's number one. Number two, do not suppress debate. As a chairperson, don't say what I must say and what I must not say. Because I've got the right to speak, and I'm disagreeing with what honorable members are doing. That too, the public protector has a right to respond to, because I don't have questions. I have the last question. It will be one question. My point is really simple, Honorable Chairperson, with the greatest respect. I think it's wrong and dishonorable for people to come here and want to subject the public protector's reports to a review. I think it's wrong. That's what they are doing. Explain yourself in terms of this remedy. Why didn't you take this remedial action as opposed to this one, blah, blah, blah. It's wrong, Chairperson. It's wrong. Go to court if you want to review. And really, Advocate Mkhwebane does not have the responsibility to respond like that. She's not obliged to respond to things that have to do with the internal detail of a report to these honorable members. It's about the function of the office, and to the extent I think other questions have been consistent, because I find it dangerous. I think it's dangerous because a person will be investigated here. Instead of going to court, they are going to send questions to members here and say, ask her about this remedial action, ask her about that, that's wrong. They must be told, these honorable members. I was saying earlier on, one of the honorable members was saying there was a rant of anger. It's not true. I will give the public, I will tweet these pages, 7 first pages. There's legislation, there's court decisions, no, the public protector is making a comment, a proper preamble, actually a great preamble, about which serves the motivation for these funds that she needs. There's no rant. There's only one paragraph speaking about that office, that executive member who is saying the public protector has descended to the political terrain. And I agree, it's wrong. a member of parliament lodged the complaint, she is investigating. That's not descending to politics. If the president of the republic has done anything wrong, let's give her the space to do her work. Please. Now, public protector, I come to you now. You say, not yourself in particular, but the gentleman who spoke about finances. I think it was you. You spoke about the requests that have been made to Treasury. That's where we come in, you see. Who did you speak to in Treasury? Who's refusing you money? How much was the funding request? If you could furnish us with those details, we'll go to Treasury just now. They will come, those people as well. We need the detail, even if you can give us after in writing. The correspondence between yourself and Treasury in relation to funds. You know, that the public protector's offices are not under security, it's a big problem. And I think if these funds, I mean, look at that closing report. This is basic. Whoever is the incumbent, the public protector is requesting funding for security to her offices. Why wouldn't you give her that? The public protector is saying 33 positions have not been filled due to funding. Why wouldn't you give her that? These are reasonable demands. So I want to know, who in Treasury did you speak to? How much did you request so that we can follow it up? People who want to speak to the incompetence of this office must follow the Constitution. Today we're talking about plans. We're talking about the tabled budget and requirements. If you want to debate the incompetency of the public protector, Section 194 is open to you. This is not the day, neither is it the platform, by the way. My final comments, I want to reiterate, and I would really want someone to respond on this. It's wrong and abuse of power for you to come here and subject this office to have to explain itself in relation to the reports that it released about your colleagues in Parliament. Thank you.
Here is this correction, Chair. Can I just read this? And unfortunately, I'm not sure if the member has taken time to... Here's the point, Chair.
Can I appeal competence?
I want to help you.
Yes. No, can we do it this way? Can we have the public protector to respond to issues? And if members of the committee want a policy debate about issues, we can continue. But let's finish the business of the day. Then we can have a policy, because I think there were issues that were raised, I think, which honorable members would want to respond to. Then we can have that debate. But let's allow the public protector to do what she has come here for, and then we can, after that, then we can have a policy debate. Public protector?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members. To respond to the questions, I'll also allow the CEO, DPP, and CFO to respond, including the COO. The questions which were asked by Honorable Ngola, the overview and any form of interference, I think my opening remarks, I think also addressing Honorable Janji, was basically because it's my first meeting and I was trying to reflect on all what has been our challenges as an institution and trying to bring members of parliament into the confidence of the public protector that these are the challenges we are facing and we are performing our responsibilities in terms of the constitution and we find ourselves being subjected to these challenges. So it's more of mentioning what section in the Constitution which says members of the public or any state institution are obligated to assist the public protector. And on the complaints which are lodged in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act, definitely it involves the executive. And unfortunately, it's lodged by members of parliament who belong to other political parties. We operate in a political space.
but as an office, we are never influenced by what is happening. I need to assure members that, as I indicated in my opening, that we check what happened, what are the facts, what should have happened, what are the prescripts applicable, especially the prescripts, what the law is saying, what the Constitution is saying, and our findings are purely based on that. On the issue of the whistleblower protection, I'll also allow the DPP to just add on the issue of the persecution or what the victims are subjected to. But this one was purely investigated in terms of the Constitution. What are the responsibilities of the police to protect all citizens, and how whistleblowers are assisting in curbing crime? So this investigation was purely based on that. We know that the issue of witness protection is a responsibility of the Department of Justice, and if there are any witnesses which needs to be protected, especially when they are witnesses and there's a court process which is ongoing. The 30 cases which are on review, those ones have indicated that when I joined the institution already there were 16 cases which were pending, and then there were additional cases which we have received. And again, these people are doing it, it's within their rights, and the law allows them to take our matters on review. Honorable Breitenbach, on the issue of the Constitutional Court matter, the public protector is paying for funding the litigation in this particular matter. And I think you would appreciate to read Section 5.3 of the Public Protector Act and understand that when the Public Protector is performing her responsibilities, or again, any ombudsman in terms of the UN principles relating to an ombudsmanship, if I perform my work and in good faith, there's that issue of immunity from that personal litigation. And 2018-19, able to pay contracted or how much from Justice? I'll allow the CEO to answer that. The clean audit strategy, the CFO will answer that. And the position of the DPP, I'll allow the DPP and the COO to just indicate the workload or what he's been busy with. And the remedial action monitoring has been removed from the threat plan. The motivation, Honorable Swart, is that, or is Breitenbach, Honorable Breitenbach, is that the Constitution is very clear of what the responsibilities of the public protector are: investigate, report, and issue a remedial action. So in this particular instance, what we've done as well in terms of our rules is normally engage then the speaker to assist us in the oversight of this responsibility. We're still following it up internally as the institution, but then it's not our core responsibility as far as that is concerned. The dialogue, what do we expect? In this particular matter is strengthening constitutional democracy. Remember, when we receive complaints, we analyze them. We know where are the gaps in the public administration. When we receive a lot of complaints, for instance, from Home Affairs or from Compensation Fund, then we need to dialogue, or if it's one municipality, let's say, or some municipalities in the Northwest, then we need to call them together and work with them in eliminating those systemic challenges. So normally you'll find that there will be a lot of complaints relating to the delay in processing an ID or delay in processing an injury on duty. And you find that we assist those institutions in resolving those systemic challenges. So that's our responsibility as an institution, to do that and to promote good governance and to eliminate the maladministration, so that we don't have a situation where then because you'd know that where there's maladministration and due delay, then corruption thrives, or then people are expected to pay for services. On the issue of the unions being victimized and surveillance and what and all those, there's nothing unlawful. There's no unlawful surveillance in that particular aspect, but I'll allow the CEO to just deal with that matter. How many matters have we defended? On this one, can I respond in writing? Because we don't have the details as far as this one is concerned. Honorable Horn, the fear the matter, I must indicate that is not a reopening. Remember, the honorable members requested that I investigate this matter, so it was a new investigation which we have done, and it's not a reopening because, remember, again, the matter was, the report which I've issued was before court for review. The progress as far as this matter is concerned, it was opened in 2018 and April, and that falls within the matters which are falling under the good governance and integrity. So normally those I've indicated to the committee, I think last time, that it normally takes us from 12 to 24 months to finalize. But I must indicate that the investigation is at an advanced stage. We've interviewed all the witnesses, the beneficiaries. We've interviewed several politicians. We are at the final stages of the investigation, and we hope by the end of August we'll be issuing the report. And as far as the North Gauteng High Court matter, an appeal has been, we've lodged the appeal with the North Gauteng High Court against that decision. Remember, I said I'll either petition the High Court, the Constitutional Court, or I will approach, I will appeal the decision. And though the judge was also saying we should be delaying this appeal, awaiting the Constitutional Court judgment, unfortunately, we couldn't do that because, I mean, as you know, that with Section 35 of the Constitution also guarantees us any, in fact, right to, not Section 35, but the Constitution guarantees the power protector also to exercise the right to litigate. And then page 9 of the
sorry, power protector, you said that you have already launched the appeal.
Yes.
Okay.
The appeal has already been launched, yes. And then the money laundering poker mandate, the investigation, the public protector can investigate corruption. I mean, if you read the POCA legislation, the public protector is one of the institutions which can investigate. It's a shared mandate. But then when there is then criminal conduct, then we refer the matter to the relevant institution to proceed with the criminal prosecution. So, and or sometimes if we are picking up that there is any crime which has been committed, we also can refer the matter to DPCI if it's commercially related, or then can also refer it to the police for investigation. The issue relating to the intelligence equipment, the redacted report, Section 182, no, I think it's Section 182.5 of the Constitution, Advocate Breitenbach. It's very clear that if then the investigation, apology for that. If the there are issues of security concerns, Section 182.5, then the power protector can decide not to issue or publish that particular information. So it was purely based on that. And the subpoena of the records, I must indicate that during the investigation, we've subpoenaed the information. There was lack of cooperation. Some of them we've opened criminal cases for failure to cooperate with the power protector. Others we've approached the court for a declaratory order, especially if it involves members of the executives who were not cooperating with the power protector. But I must indicate that, remember, in investigation, we can also be able to source documents and information independently.
Honorable Self, the litigation part, how many opposed, we will provide that information. We don't have it with us now. And the how much budgeted for legal incoming years, and who's the council will be using for the rogue unit. We don't, we haven't yet appointed any council so far, because we haven't received any documentation as far as this matter is concerned. And the budgets, the CEO and CFO will deal with it. Honorable Swart, DPP graduate, okay, that one you said you'll deal with. The SARS remedial action cannot be ignored. On all our reports, if you can check, we educate what the Constitutional Court said about the remedial actions of the Public Protector. And the legal budget, again, CEO and CFO will deal with that. What cases we litigate on, who's funding, the institution is, is funding the litigation which we have as an institution. Honorable Mulawuzi, the assistance to pay outstanding invoices, that CEO will address, because we did receive funding from Justice. The name and shame, Honorable Mulawuzi, I think even last year we engaged on this matter, specifically that one, the vendor pension fund. That one, unfortunately, the Minister of Finance now has taken the Public Protector on review, the 2012 and the 2016 reports. Those ones, we have also written to the Speaker in terms of Section 55(2) of the Constitution as an oversight, because that's your responsibility to also assist us as Member of Parliament to hold the Executive to account. So the unfortunate part of it is that it will impact on those pensioners. It means then it will be a long drawn process. And there's no hope for them, and of which, as an institution, we were trying to make sure that we give them hope. So the issue of technically insolvent by the AG, CFO will deal with that. On Vision 2023, what we have achieved, we've signed several MOUs with Justice, COCTA, SALGA, SIU, NPA, AG, and there's still more to sign. So it's just the justice one, it's the matter of implementation, because we are broadening our access and using their footprint. So the CEO must work closely with the DG, especially the offices we've identified in the far-flung areas where our outreach officials can go to and receive more complaints. And then the last year's roadshow was focusing on encouraging state institutions to establish their internal complaints mechanisms. As we are saying that, we are encouraging people to lodge their complaints with the institutions first before they approach the Public Protector. And as well, we were encouraging various institutions to address people's complaints, because I think you'd know that service delivery protests, most of the time it's when the communities are not listened to, then they end up taking the law into their own hands. So this year we will be focusing on holding certain institutions. Some of them have already approached the institution to help them to establish those complaints and mechanism. And we are saying it doesn't need additional funding, and we are not saying establish ombudsman offices like your military ombudsman, health ombudsman, but you are saying at least have an official or officials who will be listening to or who will be receiving the complaints and deal with them. And the other one of access, Public Protector conducts roadshows every year, and we're also utilizing the national days where we can engage with members of the public, and we can then take their complaints or then advise them at those activities. And Honorable Janji, I think I've indicated earlier why I was mentioning in my opening, it was part of reflecting with the committee that, yes, you are
new members, and it was taking you through or into confidence that these are the members' issues which are in public. And again, it's challenging to find executive members then commenting in public about the institution, a constitutional institution, where they are expected to be assisting the public protector. I mean, it's an issue of constitutional violation, and especially if they've taken an oath of office to do that. So on the issue of the achievements, we will have to break down the 50,000 and why the balance of the 12,000, because some of them, remember, when we've received them towards the end of the financial year, it might be matters which we have not yet processed, but then some of them you'd find that it's matters which we are still busy dealing with as an institution. We can commit that let's give you the proper breakdown as far as that is concerned. And then 100 investigation reports, why the 56 reports, and how many the first quarter. The 56 reports were based on the previous year's number which we've achieved. We've increased it because in the previous financial year, I think it was 30 reports. So this financial year going forward, we'll say we said 56 reports because trying to be innovative in doing our work using our hard powers, because in the past you'll find that when there's no cooperation, we don't subpoena and the issue of search and seizure, though we have not used that power, but in the power of subpoena, then it makes the issues to be processed quicker, but also from our side to also comply to our service standards. Especially where we receive a complaint, we should be sitting down with the complainant to understand their complaints instead of assessing the complaint a year. In fact, the issue was you'd find that some of the files are not attended to for a period of 3 months. So now it's compulsory, hence we now have the chief operating officer and the DPP who will conduct file inspection to make sure that we are doing this expedited investigation. But then the reports, remember, are dependent only on where we are picking up systemic challenges or where we feel that there is a remedial action to be issued to correct the redress. The 56 we used the previous years, and then we've increased, taking into account the backlog which we are having. And we were having this. We are having this backlog project where we've processed 183. But then I'll allow it's four out of the 466. We were left with 183. I'll allow the DPP and COO just to indicate how far we are now. And the first quarter report is available. The performance, and we've achieved our targets. And I was just telling them it's not 12 reports. They are saying we've issued 12 reports. I think there are more than that. It's 26 reports already which we've issued to this day. So the outreach clinics, you know, when we I joined the institution, we had 815 target, but that was not structured in a proper way because you'd find that outreach officials will go out or meet a family and say it's a clinic. So we had to rework that and define what is a clinic and work it according to the municipalities. So if KwaZulu-Natal has 11 district municipalities, we expect KwaZulu-Natal to visit the 11 districts and Eastern Cape, maybe if it's 5, all those 5 districts must be visited so that we can expand our reach, and hence we're having MOUs with some of the speakers, provincial speakers, who will also engage at their provincial and district level. When they have their public participation, then we can also piggyback on that so that we can have a wider reach of the people we can engage. So this is purely about the grassroots. Hence, we had to focus on that so that we can reach other. Because in the past, you find that they will go around the towns or where nearer. But this compels us to even go to the far-flung areas. the caseload per investigator, there's early resolution matters which we would say we need to finalize within 6 months. There are those who are service delivery complaints within 12 months. Then the good governance one is within 24 months. It's what we call complex matters. So normally you find that the investigators who are dealing with the service delivery complaints and the early resolution matters, they may have up to 50 complaints at the time for them to finalize. So those ones include writing only one letter, phoning the institution, so that it's quicker to resolve. But then the ones who are dealing with good governance matters, you'll find that some of them are having up to 20 files per investigator, and 20 files, it involves a lot of work, research, and detailed investigation. So that is against the international standards, because normally you'll find that if you are an investigator, especially for the good governance one, you should at least be handling 5 cases in a year, especially the complex ones. The legal fees, they will deal with, and DPP, the DPP's gratuity. I think the issue of the budgeting for that instead of budgeting for legal, I think on that one, the reports are set aside based on the investigation will be complete. It's not because of the quality of the reports. Again, it goes back to any person's right to take the public protector's matter on review, especially after the constitutional court judgment, because in the past you'd find that the number of cases were very few which were taken on review, but then this one matter is based on not agreeing with our finding, and we try and avoid that, because most of the time you find that we will even sit down with the institution to discuss the report. Those who are cooperating, I mean, we sat down with the Minister Nzimande some other time with this taxi recapitalization matter, where we were even saying, what remedial action do you think are implementable to change the system within the institution? And the other one we said with the MEC Lomo, the previous MEC of KZN, about the notorious matter. So if we get cooperation and we get assistance from the institutions we are investigating, normally we'll sit with the institutions or even the ministers. I remember we sat with the former Minister Mbalula, where we were taking him through the Section 7-9 and indicating that, but here the law says this you violated, and this, unfortunately, this is our findings, unless you can convince us when you submit your information. So it depends, and we try our level best to avoid instances where we are taken on review. So page 36 presented to National Treasurer, what's the status? CEO will deal with that, the empty spaces. And Honorable Ndlozi, the request to National Treasury, we will supply that detailed information and who we dealt with, and it's appreciated that if we can get the support from honorable members especially on the issue of the budget and how we can be able to be properly funded. I'll hand over to the CEO, Chairperson.
Thanks, PP. Honorable members and Chairperson, maybe let me start with the budget matters in a nutshell. To say that maybe because this year is the year of election, obviously it affected the program of the committees and all the stuff. These matters were supposed to be discussed earlier. But the reality is that we go through the same budget process like any other entity or the department. So this is not basically a budget that is we're asking just because we're in the committee, but we went through the MTF process, we scrutinized, was debated. We've got we are clustered in terms of different organizations in the government. Ours is called law, courts, and prisons, where you have Department of Justice, Correctional Services, Office of the Chief Justice, NPA, SIU, Human Rights, and I think SAPS. So So the results came to everyone who made a bid, and unfortunately there was no money to be allocated to us. Instead, we were requested, they took away certain amounts of monies from our budget. For instance, 1.7 million in 2019-20, 1.8 2020-2021 to 2 million. So they did a budget cut instead of allocating money. But because we are also mindful of the budget situation in the country, we didn't sit and say, okay, because there's no money, instead they're taking money and do nothing. We came up with what we called austerity measures, where we look at how the organization is performing, cutting into some flesh that is there in different programs of the organization, and that is why we are still solvent. The CFO will explain the solvency, why we managed to pay all the contractors, I remember, and we are still solvent so far, irrespective of the fact that we didn't give money. But that doesn't necessarily mean that going forward we don't request for additional budget, because we still have to have the budget that we requested. Then the other issue that I will attend to is the issue of the security in our offices. As a result of this situation of the budget, we are unable to provide physical security, what we call guarding services, in all our regional, provincial and regional offices. That is the one major thing that we are asking this committee to assist on, because it's really putting the security of our personnel at risk, even the assets and the building of the organization. There was a question around PSA victimization and surveillance of our staff members. Maybe, Chair, let me bring to your attention that, like any other organization, who also have aggrieved maybe colleagues within the organization, who had a former colleague who left the organization, but from time to time...
Can you bring your mic closer?
A former colleague that left the organization, but what we pick up is that from time to time, he will have information that is confidential within the organization that is not as supposed to have. Then we started an investigation just to find out how possible that he can have a confidential information. During the process of investigation, we pick up that there's one official who happened to be a shop steward who's supplying him with that particular investigation. And then the investigators brought to our attention. But the reality is that we had to use an independent law, the attorney firm, because we didn't want to have it internally, so that there are no questions about why we're doing all this. The report point to this shop steward, and then when we started engaging him to say, can you please explain your side of the story around this, then he felt that he's being victimized. He ran to PSA. You will know that some month ago, PSA even went further to issue a statement, which we are engaging them on that statement, that we demand that they must retract it because that's unfounded allegation. The National Court of Justice is taking its toll with that particular colleague, and maybe when we come back next time, we'll give the committee the results of that. I will ask the CFO to finalize some of the budget matters.
Thank you, CEO. Thanks, Chairperson. In terms of the question relating to our 2018-19 contractual obligations and outstanding invoices from 2017-18, yes, in 2018-19, we were able to meet all our contractual obligations. As the CEO indicated earlier, we had to implement cost containment measures to ensure that we only commit for what we have budget for. Anything that we didn't have budget for, when we did not commit. Hence, we were able to pay our contractual obligations and other services that were within the budget. 2017-18 invoices that we could not be able to pay, through the assistance of the Department of Justice additional funding, we were able to pay those invoices. In terms of our solvency, the financial statements which we have submitted at the end of May this year, which are currently under review or being audited by the Auditor General, indicates that we are out of the insolvency status. However, the report is due at the end of July for them to agree with us in that aspect. And then in terms of the clean audit strategy, we have a very broad strategy, which we consider a living document. we revise it annually depending on what risks have been identified and how they are being mitigated and other factors that may be coming through our internal audit process. One of the things that we have been able to implement or currently implementing is insourcing our internal audit function. We're in the process of appointing three colleagues to join and become permanent employees because at the moment our internal audit has been outsourced and that has been somehow a cause for us not to be able to ensure that our control environment is effective. So the strategy is very broad. It touches across all programs, not only finance. There is financial aspects, but there's also core business aspects. There is other support unit aspects in the strategy, which will include HR and ICT. But in terms of 18-19 financially specifically, the target that we had under that clean audit strategy was that we want to reduce the number of findings by 50% compared to what we had in 2017-18, and that is yet to be revealed by the end of July whether we're meeting that or not. Thank you.
I'll allow DPP to...
Thank you, Chair, and honorable committee members. Just in terms of the function, issues raised by Honorable Breitenbach and Honorable Swart, I received revised delegations. As you know, my powers are largely out of delegation from the Public Protector. So one of the big things that I've been doing over the past year, since April last year, is leading our backlog project and trying to cut down the backlog that is in the system. It's very difficult on many fronts, but of course, as the numbers, COO Ms. Baloyi will clarify the numbers. We've moved from 466 to 183. It's always difficult because there's so many things, bottlenecks that we find. I mean, for example, I'll raise issues such as pension matters. Someone will raise a technical issue such as the fact that someone doesn't have a contribution on a pension from Ciscai, for example. We can't prove on a technical matter, it can just be blocked and it gets stuck and so forth. But we are moving on that project, and of course, as part of that, I have been conducting a regular file inspections of all investigation units, at least at head office, to ensure, to try and to get to the bottom of why files don't move. And of course, we pick up a lot of issues. I'll just give you an example of matters that probably South African public has been frustrated that we're trying to ensure that they get out the Free State website. For example, people had forgotten that that even exists. That's when I've tried to make sure that it gets out. And there's quite a few others in the system that, you know, we actually owe you. And so forth, and of course, I do sit on the leadership structures of the organization, which is EXCO and a number of other decision making matters. And of course, I also am finalizing the training function that of in terms of report writing and investigations across the country to ensure that investigators have quality reports to actually make sure that the reports are litigation proof. That's some of the things that we try to. It's not an easy one. And there's also the South African. You have noticed, honourable members, there's that Alexandra issue. I'm currently leading a collaboration between the South African Human Rights Commission and the Public Protector in Alexandra on a joint project. So we, as Public Protector, are focusing more on this, on the conduct failure issues, which surrounding the Alexandra Renewal Project. In other words, the alleged corruption in that project, and of course, they are looking at the human rights side of it. And of course, again, another collaboration I'm leading is with the Human Rights Commission in Cleveland's, the hostel. So in spite of our report, we're still facing a lot of challenges in that regard, in terms of
the practical aspect in terms of implementation of some of the situation is still very dire. I'd also recommend that the committee go and see some of those things themselves. And then there's issues such as the issue of whistleblowers still remains a big challenge for us, because I think Honorable Swart will remember that there was that Protected Disclosures Act, which we also gave our input in terms of the amendment and so forth. But you find that generally whistleblowers are still very vulnerable in South Africa. I personally often advise them to be anonymous, because they lose their jobs, or they get killed, or they get assaulted, and so, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't really have a framework in place which really protects them enough. And I think that's where perhaps Parliament as a whole we needs to come to the party, including the 38 entities that were named and shamed, because some of them, it's part of that is just resistance to implement remedial action. And so forth. So, but I'll leave it there, Honourable Members. Mine is actually, I'm heading into the sunset. My term ends in 5 months. So, I've done my part. and of course, there's been no framework. Hence my request. There's not been no framework in terms of things like pensions and what. In fact, I've just been operating at the leisure of the Public Protector. So, some of those things probably will have to be clarified for my successor and so forth. With pleasure. Yes. Yes. Thank you very much.
Sorry, before you proceed, honorable members, can we deal with this matter of the Deputy Public Protector's gratuity as a committee, so that he does not have to stay here and motivate for his gratuity? So that we have the comfort of reflecting objectively without looking at him and being sometimes feeling intimidated by him or by them. Okay.
The balance of the backlog. So,
PP, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'll start with the first question around why the remedial action, you know, has been removed from the APP. We have removed it from the APP for the obvious reasons that the PP stated earlier to the business plan, and because of, you know, it's not always the case that, you know, it's all the remedial actions that are being challenged. You know, it's one or two or where, you know, people want to save face, but we do have, you know, a process where we account for all remedial actions. Hence we have, you know, a database of naming and shaming those that do not ultimately comply with the remedial action. Because in the past we put it case by case, but you'll find that, you know, with one case, especially with the 2 years, or because of the cases that are older than 2 years, people will always talk about prescription. They'll also talk about, you know, consultations, other people have left. So we are dealing with some of those issues, as our purpose is not really to find people, you know, on the wrong side, but it's also to ensure that, you know, they revise their own policies and take appropriate action, because in certain instances, especially in municipalities, one person moves, you know, to the next municipality and still commit the same, you know, malpractices. So that's what we are trying to do. Hence, we removed it from the remedial action, because of it's not every time that, you know, the cases get challenged on the entire report. And then the second aspect that I wanted to talk about is the on the achievements. It's also to brief honourable members that, you know, there are cases that we are closed at the level of an executive manager or the provincial representative, but it's not the case that, you know, the public protector would normally, you know, issue through the media or through other means. So as at the 6th of February this year, that is 2019, we had a backlog of around 466 cases, and by the end of the financial year, that is March, we had around 283 cases, and then by the end of June, we had a balance of around 81 cases. And of those cases, we had 45 draft reports, which we hope to finalize by the end of July, that we have already issued most of the draft reports to the affected parties. And we had 27 closing reports, and we also had complaints that we settled through settlement agreements, which were about, you know, three. So in essence is that, you know, we are working very hard to ensure that, you know, we don't have a backlog from 2018 backwards, and that's why the DPP keeps us busy, you know, 24/7. So by the end of July, would not have a backlog case dating back from 2018-19. The backlog that we have started is from 19 to 20, and we can account for them. We've got a dashboard that shows age analysis, where this person stays, what kind of a complaint it is, and where it's possible, for instance, with Home Affairs, because of, you know, there are various complaints from your ID, passport, you know, asylum seekers. We ring fence them, and then we deal with them in the entire country, in all offices, with a DG of Home Affairs, and we agree on the remedial action. Same thing as the government pension funds, you know, we deal with those cases like that. The city of Tshwane is also, we work in that kind of system. So in essence is, we would be having no case older than 2 years, you know, for the eight, dating back from 2018 up to 2011, because those were the cases that we were dealing with. With regards to clinics to date, of the plant that we've had 24. The only province where we did not conduct clinics, it was in Limpopo, because of that's where the first roadshow of the public protector happens. So we prioritized the roadshow, and then they'll do the clinics later. So of the plans that we had today, we have done 24. And of the reports issued today, of the 56 that we have in our APP, we have issued 33.
No, please, there is one type person, please, honorable member. No, please. Honorable public protector.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, we've answered all the questions. Thanks. Thank you so much.
There's a request for follow-ups. I'll only allow two follow-up questions per member.
Just one, Chair.
I will note people who want to do follow-ups. So we are not forced to. It's your choice to make a follow-up. Don't feel obliged to. Okay. Honorable Mlaudze, Honorable Jose, Honorable Chance, Honorable Mola, then we are done.
Oh, thanks, Chairperson. My follow-up is only one follow-up, which I asked about the illegal activity by Honorable Minister Prafi at SARS. After your findings, did you forward the findings to the law enforcement agencies for further investigation? Because it seems that he was running his own parallel structures, which tantamount to treason. So we want this thing to be forwarded to the law enforcement officers, so that if there are some steps to be taken, because no one is above the law.
No, it's a quick one. So these security guards, you said it's security personnel that you require. I want to quickly find out, are you going, is it a request for a contract or for direct hire? Because for this amount of money, you shouldn't get a contract. You should internally have them. Just a quick clarity, because isn't it you are requesting our support? Then no, let us agree on the gratuity of the because these people are working very hard, you know. I'm very impressed by the Public Protector's Office to have done such amount of work. Many of these reports, these honorable members can't even tell you, because they are just focused on their colleagues. They are not focused on the hundreds and hundreds of reports that great office is performing. Your service to this country is admirable. Very admirable. Thank you.
Honorable Ndlozi, I think you are going to have an opportunity when we discuss this matter to argue the way you are arguing. It's fine. But we will have...
Thank you, Chairperson.
Which will be dedicated to discuss the matter. Okay. Honorable Ngola.
Thank you very much, sir. On the matter regarding findings that have been taken to the review, the actual question was not that are they in terms of law allowed to take the findings of the PPA to review. It was not the question. The question was, with regard to the number of those cases, would one be incorrect to draw an inference that there is some portion of society who feels that part of the work of the Public Protector's Office was not done thoroughly and impartially? That was the actual question, Chair. Lastly, did she bring any form of security here in the form of honorable clothes? Thank you.
Members, honorable members, let us ensure that we don't contribute to some form of a disruption of the meetings. Let's try and maintain. Thank you very much. Honorable Janje.
Thank you very much, honorable Chair. In the glare of TV, it's easy to play to the gallery. But I'm mentioning that point in passing. I think the point I need to emphasize was we can't leave this meeting without clarifying this. It's important because a wrong impression will be created. And I'll share with you. The Public Protector Act provides that nothing contained in the Act shall prohibit the discussion in Parliament of a matter being investigated or which has been investigated in terms of the Act by the Public Protector. So when we're raising issues here, we should not be regarded as either encroaching into a particular investigation or defending it. It while within our right to deal with these issues. I thought I must make that point. And the second point I want to make, Chair, is I am looking forward to those detailed written responses on the questions that we have asked. That you're not in a position now to give us those details because it was not part of a plan for you to come because we only raise it in your presence. I'm really looking forward to that. But I'm also looking forward to us engaging with the Public Protector beyond this particular issue. There's quite a lot of issues. We are going to have to be interacting with the Public Protector quite on a number of issues. I'm looking forward to those things. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janje. Honorable Public Protector.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Honorable Mulawuzi, the report has been referred to the National Director of Public Prosecutions and to the Commissioner of South African Police to investigate any criminality in the matter, and the issue of security guards, I think the CEO will respond to that, and then the Honorable Ngola, the review, I think we maybe when I was answering it, I dealt with both the question by Honorable Janji, but I was saying the review matter, yes, it's within people's rights to do that, but then what we try by all means to do is that the quality of the work or the reports we are issuing, as the PP has indicated and COO, all the reports which we issue undergo the quality within the institution and even our legal services to even advise on previous review matters where possibly matters were set aside to check that we are within the law and finally before the public protector signs those reports. So our reports are very much well investigated and we have the quality assurance out of all our executive managers who needs to make sure that the quality of work we are doing is up to scratch. And then the issue of engaging with Parliament, I acknowledge Honourable Janji that yes, on our activities we should be presenting our accounting on that, yes, and then secondly we will definitely appreciate your support in our engagement. Thank you. I see you.
Thanks, Pipi. Chair, around the issue of the budget request on the security, it's a physical security guarding, which is contractual. We don't have that in our organogram, so we need to outsource and get companies that can safeguard our buildings, personnel, and assets. Then the amount is big because we now, in the fourth revolution, it's bringing its own challenges. Part of that security is information security systems to avoid leakages, hackers, and cyber criminals. So it's all contained in that amount that you see. Thanks.
Are we done? Okay. No, thank you very much. I think one of the issues that we will need to really discuss is a broader issue. It's the issue of private security guarding government buildings. And some of them, they might not even be vetted. I think it's a broader issue that needs a discussion. I think the issue that we have asked for further information, it's a breakdown of the 50,000 cases, their age analysis and geographic area, cases to be defended, the request to the National Treasury, as a committee, we have agreed that as soon as possible, we will discuss the issue of the gratuity of the Deputy Public Protector. No, thank you very much, Public Protector, and to your delegation. Don't get worried. It is in the nature of this environment. Sometimes it gets hot. It's not that we don't like you. We always enjoy interaction with our entities. Sometimes they get robust, but it's part of the oversight. As long as we stick within the law, it's okay. What we intend doing, we have been saying to all our entities that report to us, is that we want to scale up our oversight engagements, especially in this sixth administration. And as a result, we'll be dividing ourselves into subcommittees because we want to balance our legislative work, legal drafting, with our oversight. And as part of our oversight, we will be going through all the issues that our entities have raised, areas where they want our support, because most of our entities have got budgetary challenges. Where we can lend a hand, we will do so to ensure that the work of our entities get enhanced. So we'll continue to have this lovely engagements with the institution, and where you cannot provide us with answers as you have done, you tell us so that you can send them to us in writing. So we would like to thank you very much, and we are happy that you are saying that you have moved from being insolvent to being solvent. I think it's a big achievement, because I think it was making us to be extremely worried. And one of the areas that we would want to robustly engage you on is the 2023 strategy and your plan towards clean audit. It would be difficult to have a situation where an institution that does not have a clean audit investigating people for maladministration and all of those issues. So it's important that we must move towards achieving that particular target. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you for restraining yourself, even those that wanted to jump on top of the tables, for restraining yourself. We will meet tomorrow.